photons, electron-positron pairs, quarks. They flash into a brief existence, bankrolled by borrowed mass energy, then disappear as the law of conservation of energy reasserts itself. We humans see space and energy and matter from far above, like an astronaut flying over an ocean. We are too high to see the waves, the flecks of foam they carry, but they are there. And we haven't reached the end of our journey yet. Hang on to your drinks, folks.
The scale exploded again. Kate found herself flying into the glassy, onion-shell interior of one of the carbon atoms. There was a hard, shining lump at its very center, a cluster of misshapen spheres. Was it the nucleus? And were those inner spheres protons and neutrons? As the nucleus flew at her, she heard people cry out. Still clutching Bobby's arm, she tried not to flinch as she hurtled into one of the nucleons. And then, there was no shape here. No form, no definite light, no color beyond a blood-red-crimson. And yet there was motion, a slow, insidious, endless writhing, punctuated by bubbles which rose and burst. It was like the slow boiling of some foul, thick liquid. Hiram said,
"We've reached what the physicists call the Planck level. We are 20 orders of magnitudes deeper than the virtual particle level we saw earlier. And at this level, we can't even be sure about the structure of space itself. Topology and geometry break down, and space and time become untangled."
At this most fundamental of levels, there was no sequence to time, no order to space. The unification of space-time was ripped apart by the forces of quantum gravity, and space became a seething, probabilistic froth laced by wormholes.
Yes, wormholes. What we're seeing here are the mouths of wormholes, spontaneously forming, threaded with electric fields. Space is what keeps everything from being in the same place, right? But at this level, space is grainy, and we can't trust it to do its job anymore. And so a wormhole mouth can connect any point in this small region of space-time to any other point. Anywhere. Downtown Seattle, or Brisbane, Australia, or a planet of Alpha Centauri. It's as if space-time bridges are spontaneously popping into and out of existence.
His huge face smiled down at them, reassuring. "I don't understand this any more than you do," the image said. "Trust me."
"My technical people will be on hand later to give you background briefings in as much depth as you can handle. What's more important is what we intend to do with all this. Simply put, we are going to reach into this quantum foam and pluck out the wormhole we want. A wormhole connecting our laboratory here in Seattle with an identical facility in Brisbane, Australia. And when we have it stabilized, that wormhole will form a link down which we can send signals, beating light itself. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the basis of a new communications revolution. No more expensive satellites sandblasted by micrometeorites and orbit decaying out of the sky. No more frustrating time delay. No more horrific charges. The world, our world, will be truly linked at last.
As the virtuals kept playing, there was a hubbub of conversation, even heckling questions.
"Impossible!
Wormholes are unstable. Everybody knows that.
Infalling radiation makes wormholes collapse immediately."
"Well, you can't possibly."
Hiram's giant face loomed over the seething quantum foam. He snapped his fingers. The quantum foam disappeared to be replaced by a single artifact hanging in the darkness below their feet. There was a soft sigh. Kate saw a gathering of glowing light points. Atoms? The lights made up a geodesic sphere, closed over itself, slowly turning. And within, she saw, there was another sphere, turning in the opposite sense. And within that, another sphere, and another, down to the limits of vision. It was like some piece of clockwork, an orrery of atoms. But the whole structure pulsed with a pale blue light, and she sensed a gathering of great energies. It was, she admitted, truly